Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Rob, can me and you, you and I, can we get to the bottom of something? Because I like to sometimes just ask the question, why? Why is that? I am usually not puzzled by the decisions that Vegas makes. There is a reason that they continue to build these large casinos. There is a reason why these apps are in business. They're in business to separate our money from our wallet. So I understand. What is your rationale or reasoning why you think the Ravens are viewed as such a better team than Kansas City and such a decided favorite in this matchup? Because the only thing that makes sense to me in this, and maybe this is the right answer, they feel like the Ravens can score and the Chiefs won't be able to keep up with that. I don't know if Vegas has a lot of confidence in the defense. I would say they don't based on what the over-under total is. But they are thinking that this is going to be a high-scoring game and that the Chiefs' offense is not able to reach that ceiling. That's really the only thing that makes sense to me on why they would be a 2.5-point favorite at Arrowhead. If they were a 2.5-point favorite at home, if this game was in Baltimore, we wouldn't bat an eyelash. That would make sense to me. It would even make sense to me if this game was at a neutral site, and let's say you had the Ravens as a 1-point favorite for that reason. But for them to be a 2.5-point favorite at Arrowhead tells me they'd probably be a 4.5-point favorite if they were at home. We're talking about a team that has a pretty noticeable home field advantage in Kansas City. Can you tell me why you think the Ravens are so clearly a favorite over Kansas City? Is there something I'm missing, or is that the answer? That the public and Vegas trust the Ravens' offense more than they trust Kansas City's offense or Kansas City's defense. They think the Ravens can get to 31-34, and they just don't trust the Chiefs to be able to keep up.
I mean, that's the answer. I mean, I wish I had a better one for you. I wish I had a different one for you. I mean, it's not a great radio for me to be like, yep, good point, turn my mic off and throw it back to you, but I just think Vegas believes the Ravens can score and the Chiefs can't. And I think Vegas also believes that the Ravens defense is going up against an offense that can't score, so that's a get-right game for them. Because outside of that, I can't explain the line. Because sometimes, you know, you can kind of do the quick rule of thumb. Hey, who's got the better coach, who's got the better quarterback, and who's at home? Man, all those things favor Kansas City, and yet that's still 2.5. What's crazy to me is, and Tim Barbalay has made this point too, the Ravens are a bigger favorite at Arrowhead than the Eagles were. No one believes the Eagles are a worse team than the Ravens, so Vegas just has to think the Chiefs' defense only looked good last week because Russell Wilson is a shell of himself, and now going up against a real quarterback who could have been MVP last year and has had a good start to the season, they're going to just move the ball up and down this Chiefs defense. Like, that's got to be the logic, because nothing on paper about the gambling line makes any sense to me. But what's that old saying? They don't build those casinos off their losses.
Someone on the text line says, yes, C-Dot, it's the eye test. And I certainly get it with the Ravens. But I would just maybe counter with this is, the Ravens have just been a slightly flashier version of what Kansas City's been. All the problems that we look at Kansas City having, you can't do this, you can't do this. I mean, isn't that basically what the Ravens have been? The Ravens have been in control for two of their losses, and simply gave it away in the fourth quarter because of a critical mistake. I mean, couldn't you argue that same thing with Kansas City? Now, again, the offense for Kansas City is a thing. And if this game is going to be played like week one Bills and Ravens, I think that favors Baltimore. If it's going to be played like Monday Night Football, I also think it's going to play that way. But when was the last time that the Chiefs really got into a shootout with somebody? Like, it's been a while since that's been the case. More times than not, their games are kind of like the one that they lost to the Philadelphia Eagles. It's kind of a knockout, drag-out kind of game. Philadelphia makes one or two more plays, and they end up winning. Or it's like the first game of the season where the Chiefs had a chance to get off the field. The Chargers make one more play, and they end up winning this game. It's been a while since the Chiefs have been in some 41-40 game. I don't think you can go into this game expecting the Ravens to score 41 or 38 points. Spags' defense is certainly going to do enough to kind of keep them underneath that. So if this game is played into the 20s, then it's really anybody's game and it's a coin flip. But the spread doesn't really indicate that they think it's going to be a coin flip kind of game. They think decidedly that the Ravens are the better team over the Chiefs. I just don't feel that way right now.
What's even more confusing about the Vegas line, and maybe we're looking too much in the line, is the Ravens are 2.5-point favorites. The over-under is 48. So Vegas is telling you we expect a 24-21, you know, rock fight type of game. Like, we expect a defensive slugfest relative to what the current NFL is. Vegas over-under line is not saying, hey, we expect the Ravens 31-21 just to take care of business, expect points. Their number indicates it's going to be a rock fight, which makes me even more puzzled, because if this game's like 14-17, it's Kansas City's game. If it's like 24-23, it's Kansas City's game. I can not see a game script where it's a tough, you know, grind it out type of game and the Chiefs lose that one because they have the better defense. So when you sprinkle in the over-under being at 48.5, it makes even less sense to me why Vegas believes the Ravens are going to come in here and really take care of business.
I do know this heading into this matchup. I am putting the responsibility of this game onto the defensive line and the linebackers. To me, they are going to be the difference in whether the Chiefs win or lose this game. If you are a Chiefs defensive lineman and you are watching the tape from Monday Night Football and you saw the Lions get 7 sacks, if you saw Aiden Hutchinson force a fumble on Derrick Henry that shifted the momentum in the game, you got to be feeling like we can do the same. You guys know my rules. I'm always going to be harder on the players who make the most amount of money on the team because they are telling me these are the players we expect to win games with. This team has spent a lot of money on Chris Jones. They spent a lot of money on George Karlaftis. Charles Aminahou was back on a one-year deal. He's looking to get paid. You brought back Derek Nnadi. They have spent a lot of resources on their front four. There might not be a team in the AFC. Certainly in the NFC, you got Philadelphia, you got Detroit, you got teams that really want to run the ball. There might not be a team in the AFC that is more committed to running the football and using their quarterback in the run game than Baltimore is. This is the game where your front seven have to win this matchup. The Lions won that matchup up front. They limited Baltimore from running the football, and then on the offensive side of the line of scrimmage, they ran the football effectively against them and controlled the tempo and controlled the style of the fight. So I understand Mahomes has to make plays. You got to win the turnover differential. All of those things matter. This is a banner game for the front four and the front seven. You spent a lot of money for it to be good. You spent a lot of money on Nick Bolton. You spent a lot of money on Chris Jones, a lot of money on George Karlaftis. Those guys have to play big. And on Monday, if we are talking about the Chiefs only getting 1 sack and the Ravens ran the ball effectively, that is just not a game that I think Kansas City wins. I think the game was played in the style of the Ravens, and I think the Ravens got back to 2-2.
I don't disagree with you, but let me ask you this question. Are the Chiefs capable of doing that? Because we haven't seen it all this season. And I'm just comparing the Chiefs' D-line, O-line to the Lions, because that's unfair. I think the Lions are probably better offensive line play. I think they should be worse defensively, but whatever. I mean, the Chiefs just played the Giants. Did you see the Chiefs' D-line bully around the Giants' O-line? Because I saw a regular ho-hum defense line performance with a rookie Cam Scadaboo rushing for 60-plus. Did you see the Chiefs' D-line push around the Eagles O-line? I didn't. Now, Eagles O-line's elite. Did you see the Chiefs D-line pushing around the Chargers O-line in Brazil with a backup right tackle? I didn't see that either. So I agree with you. They should go out. They should have a banner day. They should be, you know, CEO of Sac Nation. All that stuff should be happening. Have they done that this year? They've only played one team that we think has an elite offensive line, and they've been on a milk carton. They haven't been here once. Can they do it?
No, and I think that's a really good point, and that's why I believe that these two defenses are in very similar places. I know right now that the Ravens defense is tied for 31st in the league. I don't think they're a bottom three defense in the National Football League. I think they went up against some high-powered offenses, and it's early on in the season. So I expect growth from the Ravens defense. We'll see how they look in this one. But, I mean, the numbers are the numbers. Buffalo did whatever they wanted to offensively. The Lions did whatever they wanted to offensively. Is Kansas City going to be able to have success? It's one thing to let those offenses who are operating at full capacity right now. The Lions have all the pieces you can ask for. The Bills, they've been one of the more potent offenses in the league. The Chiefs offense has been average for the last two seasons, and they're even more average right now that you have your number one and number two receiver either out or getting one of them back from injury. So that's on the Ravens side of it. Hey, I'm not entirely sure if their defense is as bad as everybody says it is. Going up against Kansas City will answer that question to me if Kansas City can go crazy against that defense. And I think you make a fair point about Kansas City's defense. The Chargers are one of the better offenses in the league, and they didn't get good pressure against them, and the Chargers had a lot of success. So we know the Ravens, they are a multi-layered attack. They can throw the ball down the field. Their quarterback can take off and run at any moment. They got a Hall of Fame running back. They got a capable tight end. There's a lot of things to like offensively about this Ravens team. They're one of the five best offenses in the league. It's going to be a really good matchup on both sides. And like I said, I'm holding the Chiefs front seven responsible. You paid Nick Bolton this offseason. You paid Chris Jones last year. You paid George Karlaftis. Those guys have to step up and play big. You got to take away the run threat from one of those two. You cannot let Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry run the football effectively against you. If that happens, you lost. It's that simple. If you let that happen, you lost. We'll continue this conversation coming up on the other side. I have labeled this Prove It Weekend in the NFL and college football. I'll explain. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison. Watch the show on YouTube by subscribing to the 965 YouTube channel. The Drive brought to you by DM Entry Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Entry Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this. 965, The Fan.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
I want to read this text to you guys because I certainly understand the sentiment behind it, but I think in some of these ways, it just makes it sound a lot easier than what it is. CDOT, if the Chiefs can stop the run, then they are going to win. Lamar will and cannot beat someone with just his arm. We were having this debate with the Midday Show, and they provided one single game where the Ravens had under 100 yards rushing, and Lamar threw for 304 touchdowns. That was against the Bengals. Eliminate the run, and Lamar is not an elite quarterback and can't beat you passing. Now, I think we have kind of oversold Lamar and his ability to throw the ball and beat you, but that's the Ravens' calling card. The Ravens are one of the three best rushing teams in the league. So you're right. If you can eliminate what the Ravens do best and force them to do something else, yeah, you got a really good chance at beating them. It's really hard to stop them from running the football. They have a future Hall of Fame quarterback who is maybe the most mobile quarterback in the history of the league, like certainly on the short list. Like if we are saying just take off, scramble, dangerous, can beat you with their legs, we're talking Mike Vick, Cam Newton. Like it is a very, very small list of people. And if he decides to hand the ball off, he is then handing it off to somebody else who we think is going to go into the Hall of Fame. So just, I'm with you. Hey, man, if you can take away the run, you can beat the Ravens. Man, it's really hard to take away the run from the Ravens. They do it as well as any team in the National Football League. Like, we're talking maybe the Lions and the Eagles. Is that it? Is there anybody else you can think of that you think runs the football as effectively as the Ravens in this matchup? So, yeah, I'm with you.
The if
you
Niners, forced, maybe? Maybe?
I think the Ravens are a better running team than them. Just because if you also have the ability to have Lamar, like, Lamar can run for 100 yards and Derrick Henry can run for 100 yards in these games. There's not many teams where you think that's the case where they have multiple people who are that dangerous and can beat you. I think the Chiefs do a pretty good job against Derrick Henry. Like, this is not me telling you I think the Ravens are going to run all over the Chiefs, but I think you'd be fooling yourself on a 3rd and 5 to not be worried about Lamar and his ability to get out in space. And if it's one-on-one with Leo Chenault or Drew Tranquil against Lamar Jackson, the Ravens have the advantage in that individual matchup.
And we've pulled these stats earlier in the week. The Chiefs have done a pretty good job historically against Derrick Henry. He's never had one of those, oh my God, can you believe that happened type of games. But yeah, to your point, the texter's correct. If you can stop the run, Lamar becomes one-dimensional. He's not as good. He also is probably the greatest running quarterback in the history of the league. If not, he's definitely the top three in the history of the league. So just saying stop him and actually stopping him are not one the same. Even last year, I think last year's Chiefs defense was better than this year's Chiefs defense. I think he rushed for 100 yards last year on opening night against the Chiefs. Like, it's one thing to say it. It's another thing to go out and execute it.
You know, we always love a good Hall of Fame debate on this show. Someone just texted in. I say if Randall Cunningham isn't in the Hall of Fame, then Lamar doesn't have a shot in the Hall of Fame. Lamar Jackson has won 2 MVPs, and I think he should have won it last year. I think Lamar is trending in the direction that he will be a Hall of Fame quarterback. He is one of the best quarterbacks of his era, one of the best quarterbacks of his generation. He has been that now for over half a decade. Lamar Jackson is trending in the direction of being a Hall of Fame player. He's a better player than Randall Cunningham was. I got all the respect in the world for Randall Cunningham. He wasn't Lamar Jackson. I don't think we've ever seen a quarterback like Lamar Jackson, not for this long. He is a better player than Vic was. I think at his ceiling, he's a better player than Cam Newton was. Like, his unique style and ability to run and take off and how dangerous he is, I don't know if we've seen a quarterback that combines all of those things into one player the way that he does.
Do you know who I think the closest comparison as far as a good runner is? Josh Allen.
Josh Allen is more of a Cam Newton kind of runner, and he's just a far advanced passer than I think Cam Newton was. He doesn't scare me when he gets out, not in the same way that Lamar does. Like, Lamar can kind of run past you and just kind of shake you out your shoes. Like, Josh Allen's more of that 3rd and 1 short yardage. You're just not bringing him down because he's 6'5", 240 pounds, kind of the way that Cam was. I just think they're both extremely dangerous runners, just dangerous in very different ways.
That's fair, yeah. I mean, I think Lamar's more dynamic as a runner than Vic. I mean, there's some super old guy we're unaware of, like Norman Brocklin or something, but who cares, yeah.
Someone says if Lamar Jackson is a Hall of Famer, so is Michael Vick. Okay, let's move on. He's won 2 MVPs. Can we just not acknowledge, even though that he hasn't won a Super Bowl, that Lamar Jackson is one of the best quarterbacks that we've seen? Like, I know that you're in this to win championships. You're in this to win Lombardi trophies. And he has certainly struggled in January. But we don't have to diminish how great Lamar Jackson has been so far in his career and what he's accomplished under the age of 30. He has had a dynamic start to his career, and we'll see if he can get over the hump. I mean, we've been talking about this week. Like, Lamar still has a whole lot to prove. A whole lot to prove. But, I mean, if you want to go historically, I'm not here to make all the excuses in the world for him. I made this point when we were talking about Herbert, but I mean, it applies to him as well. I mean, no one thinks you can do it until you can do it. A lot of the questions and criticisms that people have for Lamar, they had about Peyton Manning. It took Peyton Manning 9 years to win a championship. That's kind of the same path that we're on with Lamar. That's the same path that we're on with Josh Allen. So we can have that conversation about windows closing, and I don't think that Lamar is going to play until almost 40 the way that Peyton Manning is. They're obviously two very different kind of players. But I think that I think because Mahomes has done it so early and so quickly, I think we are forgetting that the path that Josh Allen and Lamar are going through, that's kind of the more traditional path for most quarterbacks in the league. You kind of got to bump your head 3-4 times in the postseason, and then eventually everything lines up, and then you eventually get there.
It just doesn't make any sense. I guess maybe this is unique to Kansas City. Maybe this happens at every NFL market in the world. I don't know. I don't cover the NFL in every single market. I do this show in this city. But man, if you say another quarterback is good, it just becomes World War III on the text line. Like people saying, well, he's actually worse than Randall Cunningham, Mike Vick. The rules just, you know, allow that. You know, so and so is a running back. He's not really a quarterback. Like, it just, I don't know why we can't acknowledge it. Lamar Jackson is flawed. Lamar Jackson has not won. Lamar Jackson in the wintertime is not who you want as your quarterback. When they start spray painting the word playoffs in the field, Lamar Jackson shrinks up. All those things are true. But you can also acknowledge he has multiple MVPs. He could have won a third one last year. Some would say he should. Like, it's okay to acknowledge he's really good.
I think he
really should
have won the MVP last year. Like, I think he lost because of voter fatigue. I also think, and I understand, like, it's a make or miss league, and did you do it or didn't do it? Like, why the Ravens didn't advance last year in the postseason was not really a Lamar issue. They went on the road against the Buffalo Bills. Lamar put a drive together to take them down the middle of the field. They go for the two-point conversion. Mark Andrews is open in the end zone. He throws it to Mark Andrews on a very catchable ball, and he drops it, and they lose 27-25. Now, again, it's a pass or fail. Did you win or did you lose? I'm not here making any excuses for Lamar, and he has certainly been a lesser quarterback in the postseason than the regular season. I'm just pointing out that if we could go back in the time machine and go back to Sports Talk Radio in 2005, almost all of the same criticisms that people made about Peyton Manning, they now make about Lamar Jackson. Maybe Lamar gets there, maybe he doesn't, but struggling in the regular or being great in the regular season and struggling in the postseason, that is not a unique to Lamar Jackson thing. Almost every generation of quarterbacks has usually had one or two of those kind of guys that just have come up short when the games matter the most. And it's just going to be that way when you were talking about a single elimination tournament where you can play fantastic for 17 weeks. Man, you throw that one interception in week 19 and that is the end of your season. That's the NFL playoffs.
And again, this might be unique to Kansas City. You know how yesterday we talked about with Justin Herbert, like I said, Kansas City fans don't respect him, and you're like, that's a Kansas basketball problem. Maybe what we're seeing is the Kansas basketball problem incarnate itself differently. But it feels like me and you talk glowingly about the first, second, or third best quarterback in the NFL. Like, that's where Lamar Jackson is year after year after year. He's one of the top three quarterbacks in the NFL. We say positive things about him, and people just go out of their way, the mental gymnastics to explain he's not actually one of the best three. It's wild to me. He's less accomplished than Mahomes. He's worse than Mahomes, but he's still one of the top three in the NFL. Like, they don't just stop ranking quarterbacks after one. That's not how it works. Lamar is excellent to watch.
I think that this is a prove it Sunday, which I think kind of leads us into our next topic, because Lamar is certainly in the prove it. Like, we talked about this yesterday. No one will believe it with Lamar until you do it in the postseason. He could throw for 60 touchdown passes this year. There will always be the yeah, do it in January. That is just the nature of the position in which he plays. So Lamar is certainly in a prove it. You got to go out there and do it. The Chiefs are in a prove it. You know, are you still that championship level team? Now, I understand why people in Kansas City are, I don't want to say putting asterisks by it, but I think there is a belief in Kansas City. The Chiefs aren't fully healthy right now. You can catch us right now. When we get healthy in the second half of the season, we are still going to be the best team in the AFC. And you certainly have earned that by being the best team in the AFC in five of the last six seasons. If you look outside of that, and I think more specifically now talking about college football, man, this seems like a prove it weekend for a handful of teams right now in college football. When you look at Ole Miss, I think is, they have been the southern version of Missouri for the last 3 years. Missouri has been a very, very good program under Eli Drinkwitz. But there has kind of been that, well, when you play the upper echelon teams in the SEC, that is where Missouri has typically run into trouble. That's the problem that a lot of teams run into. Ole Miss has kind of been in that exact same boat. They've been that team that can win 9 or 10 games, kind of knock on the door of the college football playoff or be considered like they're one of those teams, and then they usually lose a game they're not supposed to, and that ends up derailing them. Last year for Ole Miss, they lost at home to Kentucky. They had a first-round pick quarterback. They're at home. They scored 17 points against Kentucky. That is the reason why Ole Miss didn't make the postseason. Fast forward to this year, Rob. You got a home game against a top-5 team in college football. If Ole Miss wins this, they are probably ranked in the top 10. They're ranked 13 right now. They're for sure ranked in the top 10. You are always going to get the benefit of the doubt if you play in the SEC. You will have one of the best wins so far in the college football season. And we've now proven you can lose 2 games and still make the college football playoff. So if you were telling me that you can rack up a win like home against LSU, you got 3 road games left between Georgia, Oklahoma, and Mississippi State. If you can go 2-1 in those 3 games, you have to think that that Ole Miss is going to make the college football playoff. So to me, this is a prove it. Ole Miss, can you take this step from being a 9-win, maybe a 10-win team? Can you take that next step to being an 11-win team and locking yourself up a chance to make the college football playoff? It feels like that's a stake for them this weekend against LSU.
I feel like, and you know, prove it's a good way to say it, it's a perception changing weekend. And we're saying the same thing, it's semantics, but you'll get my point. The same way we just talked about Lamar and how the text line is full of, well, Lamar's not that good, he can't break through. That's how people feel about Ole Miss. I said earlier in the show we were talking about Ole Miss, Circle of Trust. I have them outside the Circle of Trust because they lose this game. They've always lost this game. Lane Kiffin gets this moment because he's a good coach and a good recruiter, and he gets his team to this moment every year, and they fall short. They've lost to Bama at home. They've lost to LSU at home in the past. You mentioned last year at Kentucky. They've lost to Alabama on the road. Like, they lose this game a lot. If they want to be one of those teams that goes from, you know, feisty 9-3 every year in the SEC, and you don't want to play them, but you can probably get them in the biggest moments, you have to win this weekend if you're Ole Miss. I also think the same thing about Lamar. I kind of think the same thing about the Chiefs. Like, the perception is the Chiefs are down. If you want to tell people, well, the Chiefs are the Chiefs still, this is a good weekend to go out and get a win. Like, perception, prove it, whatever term you want to use, this is a big weekend in football for the people we've always kind of looked down on as, like, the, hey, you're tier B in your sport. You have a chance to break through and get into tier A with a statement on this weekend.
Yeah, it kind of goes along with what I think has kind of emerged as a theme this week, is no one believes you can do it until you do it. No one believes that Penn State can be one of those kind of programs until they prove it on the field against a team like Oregon. Everyone believes that Lamar can't step up in the postseason until you do it. Like, there is a really, really thin line between skepticism and then belief. It is usually you just simply walking through the door. If Ole Miss wins on Saturday, you have to discuss them as a team that can make the college football playoff. They have gone from a team that's kind of on the outskirts to a team that I would say they control their own destiny as a team that can make the college football playoff. So you got to take them seriously in that regards. And for the most part, I think they avoid a lot of the real difficult pitfalls that you are going to get in the college football season. And if you were telling me a game like Oklahoma, you were supposed to go on the road and play a top 10 team with their Heisman finalist quarterback. Now that player is removed from the game. It just changes the math of where you could potentially be. Let's now move on to Penn State. They just never win this game. James Franklin is 3-17 against teams that are ranked in the top 10. They are 1-12 against teams that are ranked in the top 5. The one win that they got came in 2016 for Penn State in these matchups. They never win these games. Oregon, for the most part, they're pretty competitive in these games, and they win these games. Goes along with the Prove It Saturday. Penn State, if you want people to stop saying you can't win these games, well, then eventually you got to figure out a way to win these games. And if in back-to-back seasons you lose at home to Ohio State the way that you did last year, and then you lose a home game at night to Oregon, who is traveling cross-country with a sophomore quarterback, a lot of the doubt that people have about Penn State, it will just only continue. You eventually got to prove it on the field.
I think, to your prove-it point, I think Ole Miss and Penn State are in very different prove-it categories, to your point. I don't know that this weekend is a prove it for Penn State for me. Let's say they win. Do you think the perception around Penn State heading into the playoffs is going to be different because they beat Oregon? And maybe I'm just, you know, nitpicking and being unfair and I'm, you know, moving the goalposts, whatever term you want to use. But I think Penn State's in a very different category than the other teams, because I think even if Penn State wins against Oregon, which I'm predicting they will, do you think come Thanksgiving time, the week after Thanksgiving, when it's college football playoff time, we're getting ready for the first round and they're in the Fiesta Bowl or whatever in the second round and they're taking on, I don't know, Tennessee. Do you think people are going to say, hey, remember when they beat Oregon? They've bucked the trend. They're a team now that you can trust in these AP top five games. You know, Penn State has changed everything. Or do you think Penn State has to wait until there's a postseason on the line for them to prove it? Because I don't know that week five or whatever, week four, whatever it is in college football at home against Oregon is that sort of prove it moment for them, because they fall short in the bigger moments.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that would kind of start to change my opinion about them. I mean, I guess the problem right now with them is they just lose all of those games. They lose those games at home. They also lose them in January. Like, there's just really no track record of doing that. Now, this season, they got three of those games. They play Oregon on Saturday. They play Ohio State in November. They also play Indiana at home in November as well. So in terms of checking the boxes on, is Penn State one of those kind of caliber teams? I mean, they play three of those teams over the next 7 weeks in college football. So I think we'll get our answer of where they are. I don't think that this Alabama thing is going to work with Kalen DeBoer. Maybe I am completely overreacting to what we have seen so far, and you just need more time to get things going. It just doesn't feel how it's supposed to feel right now with Alabama. It feels like in the now NIL transfer portal that the talent has kind of dispersed out a little bit, and Alabama's kind of lagging behind. I'm used to Alabama just having far more talent than everybody else. That's not really the case. We've seen some of the iconic pictures where they show their running back room. And it's like, wait, they had four future NFL running backs on their team, or their wide receiver room, or all five of their offensive linemen get drafted on day one and day two. I don't think they have that level of talent anymore. They obviously don't have that level of coaching anymore. And seeing them get pushed around by Florida State the way that I saw them get pushed around in week one, it has completely soured me on the Alabama experience. I think that Kalen DeBoer is a phenomenal head coach. He just might not be a phenomenal head coach for Alabama. I think you got to have a certain resolve. I think you got to understand how to recruit in the South. I'm just not sure if he has all of those things. So this is one of those games to me. If you want to prove somebody like me wrong, go on the road against Georgia, a national championship contending team, and go win in Georgia and put yourself back into the conversation. Because if Alabama loses this game, I don't know how you think they're making the college football playoff when you look at their road games that they have left and what they would need to do. They go on the road and play Missouri. If you're Alabama, they go on the road and play Tennessee this year. Like, I'm just looking at Alabama's schedule. I just don't know how you find a pathway for them to the playoff if they lose on Saturday to Georgia.
Let me ask you a question about Kalen DeBoer and Alabama. Let's say he loses and he finishes 8-4, 9-3 this year. All right. He can lose to Missouri. He goes 9-3, whatever. And they fire him because he's all the things you said. Is Alabama going to find a better coach than Kalen DeBoer? Because they had their pick of the litter when Nick Saban retired. Let's be honest. That was the premier job in college football. They struck out with Dan Lanning, who stayed at Oregon. They struck out with Kirby Smart, who stayed at Georgia. They struck out with Dabo, which is hilarious in hindsight. He stayed at Clemson. They hired the guy who was in the national championship game at Washington. They hired Kalen DeBoer. It was, at the time, considered a coup of a hire. If you run him out of town because he just doesn't fit at Bama for whatever reason and he isn't having the same success, is Bama still a destination job? Like, I think this is a really fascinating weekend for both the program and the coach, because if the coach wins, it doesn't matter. He's going to stay there. He might build a program. If he loses and all those things happen that you laid out and he gets run and we get a Bama coaching search, I think Bama fans might be in for a harsh reality about what their program is.
Yeah, I disagree. I just think what happened with DeBoer, and I get why they hired him. He was probably the best on paper candidate that was out there. Washington was playing at a national level. You struck out with some people who maybe made a cultural fit for you, and then you go get the candidate that's the best on the board. But now just looking at it, I mean, Kalen DeBoer, he was born in South Dakota. He didn't play college football in the South. He never coached in the South until he started at Alabama. So I just think how you win at Washington and how you win at Fresno State is just drastically different than how you win at Alabama. I really think he struggled to adjust to all of those things, and I think you are seeing all of that play itself out. So I still think that Alabama is one of those marquee jobs. I still think it's one of those dream jobs. I do think what potentially happened is they kind of tried to chase the name, maybe not the best fit for you. I mean, Ryan Day wasn't a big name. You ended up getting him. Marcus Freeman wasn't a big name at Notre Dame when you lost Brian Kelly, but you got somebody that knows the system, knows the area, knows what it recruit what it means to recruit at that part of the country. That's what I think Alabama needs to get back to. Kirby Smart just made a lot of sense. I know the SEC, you're going to take me to a place where I just got to recruit Atlanta. If I can recruit Atlanta really well and you're going to give me the NIL and all those things, we can do a really, really good job. I think that's a major reason why he's had so much success. Coming up at the top of the hour, we are going to be joined by Nate Taylor of ESPN. Let's get back to the Chiefs. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
This is Wyatt Thompson from K-State, and you're listening to The Drive with CDOT right here on 96.5 The Fan and the Odyssey app.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got...
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
Got this.
We were talking a little college football. I want to remind you that our college football coverage on 96.5 The Fan is brought to you by Bud Light. Bud Light and Tanner's are teaming up to make every college game day legendary. Every Saturday, rep your favorite college. Catch every play and enjoy $15 buckets only at Kansas area Tanner's locations. Bud Light and Tanner's, from the stands to the bar, your game day headquarters. I want to give you guys a couple of stats actually about the Kansas City Chiefs, and Nate Taylor is going to join us here coming up in just a little bit. So, in the last four Chiefs games, they have been outscored by 18 points heading into the second quarter of these games. I think we have seen with the Chiefs that they have pretty routinely at times got down 7-0, 10-0. I don't think there's usually a reason to worry about it. The Chiefs always find a way to get themselves out of whatever situation it is, and they usually figure out a way to have more points than their opposition. But I think it is important to note that right now, while the Chiefs are not operating at full capacity and playing these good teams, man, getting down early, it's just harder to dig yourself out of it because you don't have the explosiveness the way that you have before. I'm going to get since 2000, the team that scores first wins around 68% of the time. Now, it makes sense. You get the ball first, you go down and score, you can set the tempo. All of that makes sense. The only reason I bring this up is I think what the Chiefs have done in these games against good opponents is it's hard to just add up all of these things and still figure out a way to win. You let the team score first. You also lost the turnover differential. You committed a penalty on third downs. You then missed an extra point. Like, these are all things that when you add it up, this is how teams lose football games. So right now, while the Chiefs, I think we can agree, they can't really out-talent you. There have been times where the Chiefs could out-talent you. Hey, their offense just got more dogs than you got. You can't cover everybody. You can't cover Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and Sammy Watkins and also the run game out of the backfield. Like, they just have an abundance of things, and over time, it is just going to work. The Chiefs just can't beat you that way right now. So what they can't do to me is fall into bad habits or do things that losing teams do. We start off slow, or we score 3 points in the first quarter of the game. 6 points in the first half of the game. We lose the turnover differential. We commit a penalty. You have to clean up some of those mistakes right now because you don't have the gunpowder to just get yourself out of those scenarios. So that's why for me in this one, just starting earlier against these teams. You started slow against Philly. You started slow against the Chargers. Man, you can't continue against teams that we think are going to make the postseason or have chances to compete for championships. You can't just keep putting yourself by the eight ball from a score perspective because you're already there from a talent perspective right now while you're trying to get back to 100%.
There was once a time when we talked about the Chiefs like they were the Golden State Warriors. And, you know, they were just unstoppable offense, all the stuff. But in those times, the Chiefs could make mistakes. The Chiefs could be bad at things. The Chiefs could do things that you're like, good teams don't really do that. But they just had whatever the it was, talent, coaching, whatever, they could overcome all of them. I remember in 2020, the team I think is probably the best Chiefs team in this run. They went 15-2. All season, I felt like, you know, special teams-wise, they're not great. Their running back room is just okay. It didn't matter. They were just humming, and they went to 15-2. And the big talk was, do the Chiefs care in December? They could do, basically, they could do the little things wrong, and it didn't matter. They still dominated games. I think now the Chiefs have to play more like a Bill Snyder team. One thing as a KU fan, I remember about Bill Snyder teams, and why Bill Snyder teams are so good, is they were elite at the little things. They went into a game with less talent against Texas or Oklahoma, but they were better in special teams. They didn't turn the ball over. They handled the line of scrimmage. They won time of possession. They committed less penalties. They just made less bonehead mistakes. And because of that, the talent gap evened out, and K-State won a lot of games under Bill Snyder's tutelage. I feel like that's the Chiefs right now. Andy Reid kind of has to coach this team like it's a Bill Snyder K-State team. I'm not saying that the talent deficit that Bill Snyder sometimes faced at K-State, but you understand the analogy. You can't miss kicks. You can't miss extra points. You can't have boneheaded penalties. Looking at you, 74, with every illegal formation, false start, and hold you have. You can't lose a turnover battle. You can't have things where on a third and down with the game on the line, you decide to have your pass rusher rush inside. There's no one in the outside lane. 18-yard rush later, you lose the game. You can't have those sorts of mistakes because you don't have the it factor to overcome them. And I wonder if Andy Reid, who we know is not the most, you know, hardcore disciplinarian, he's more of a player's coach, is kind of coaching like it's 2020 still, where it's like, yo, you guys will figure it out. You can overcome them, the mistakes. They can't really overcome the mistakes right now. He needs to coach like Bill Snyder did in 98.
Do you think the Chiefs only have one way of winning this game?
Yes.
Because the Ravens, I think you would agree the Ravens have multiple ways of winning this. You would not be surprised if the Ravens won 24-21. The Ravens could also win a game 41-40. I don't know if the Chiefs could win the high-scoring shootout kind of game, but they could easily win this game if the game script is very similar to the Philadelphia game. I went back and I looked at the box score between Baltimore and Buffalo earlier in the season. Now, Buffalo didn't really run the ball very well by their standards. James Cook had 13 carries for 44 yards. Josh Allen had 14 carries for 30 yards. Now, it's important to note they scored 3 rushing touchdowns in the game. But in this game, I mean, Josh Allen did just about whatever he wanted to. He only got sacked one time. That has been a theme with the Ravens pass rush so far. They didn't sack Jared Goff. They only sacked Josh Allen one time. And then if you're looking at the pass numbers, Keon Coleman had 112 yards. Khalil Shakir had 64 yards. Joshua Palmer had 60. James Cook had 60. Dalton Kincaid. I mean, if you're going to get more than 45 yards from 5 of your receivers the way that they did, and one of your guys is going to get 100, you're just going to put up a whole lot of points. So in this game, either you find more balance and you can kind of grind it out on the ground that way, or Xavier Worthy, Juju, the other Tyquan Thornton, like you got to have a balanced offensive day. I mean, even in a game in which Buffalo just didn't really run the football effectively, they had almost 500 yards of total offense in the game. I don't think Kansas City has really shown you that they can put together that kind of offensive explosion right now, not with the pieces that they have. So you're just going to have to play this game at a slower pace. That's easier to do when you can run the football and stay committed to running the football, but that's been a question for the Chiefs this year.
I think to answer your question, there is basically only one game script where I think the Chiefs win. You pointed out earlier, the Chiefs haven't been in a shootout in a while, but this turns into a shootout like that Bills-Ravens game, or even kind of like Ravens and Lions was, like 38 points in the NFL is a lot of points. Like, If it turns into one of those type of games, I don't know the Chiefs win. Because even though the Chiefs are getting healthier, Xavier Worthy, we anticipate being back. We'll talk to Nate Taylor about it here in about 10 minutes. We anticipate him being back and ready to go this week. And Jalen Royals was a full participant. Maybe we'll see him this week. Like, even though those things are happening, I don't know if it's 38-41 the Chiefs can win. I don't know if it's 38-35 the Chiefs can win. I don't know the Chiefs have the offense that they can go just, hey, we're going to just be like my analogy earlier, the Warriors, and just go out and bum rush you with offense. I think if this game's 24-21, 21-17, that's in the Chiefs' favor, and I think more times than not, that's how the Chiefs win. But I don't think anything other than a rock fight, defensive battle, similar to how it looked like with the Eagles, is a script for the Chiefs to win. If this looks like Sunday Night Football or Monday Night Football, excuse me, the Chiefs lose that game.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the game that if the Chiefs win, you're going to have to feel like this game was a little bit boring for them to win. Heading into the fourth quarter against Philadelphia, Philadelphia had a 13-10 lead in the game. Now, the Chiefs put together a 14-play, 74-yard drive. The Chiefs were controlling time of possession. They were controlling the clock. They were getting an exorbitant amount of plays. They throw the interception with Travis Kelce. Philadelphia goes down the field and scores on the very next drive on a long drive themselves. 10 plays, 60 yards. It took up 5 minutes. At that point, just your offense is not built to overcome a two-possession deficit like they were against the Philadelphia Eagles. So we all know how these games play out with Kansas City. This game is going to be close heading into the fourth quarter because all Chiefs games are close heading into the fourth quarter. The game against Philadelphia, they got the ball down three heading into the fourth quarter. I imagine it's going to be very similar. Chiefs are up 17-14. They're down 17-14. You need to make one big play, one stop. You need to do something in the fourth quarter that changes the momentum of the game. In week one, you gave up a long run to Justin Herbert, so your offense couldn't get the ball back. In week two, you threw an interception at the goal line. Over in the game, you did not cause the turnover. You took points off the board. It's just really difficult to overcome against good teams. I know they even sit at 1-2, but they are a good team. You are not going to be able to out-talent them, in my opinion. You got to be able to out-execute them, and that has been a problem for the Chiefs. It's also been a problem for the Ravens, and that's why the Ravens find themselves at 1-2, and they need this game equally as bad as Kansas City does. Coming up on the other side, Nate Taylor of ESPN is going to join us in studio for the 4 o'clock hour. Keep it right here. It's the Drive.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.